Christy saw the whole world spread out below her, like a tapestry of horror. She passed like a phantom wind over gloomy wastes, gazing down on the legacy of the New Cost. Where there had once been lush and fertile fields, the desert swept in, a sea of sand lapping at the spires of half-buried skyscrapers. Instead of cities and towns, only vast, ugly craters pockmarked the ground, seething with poison. Ungainly caricatures of human beings lurched across the wastelands, forlorn monstrosities birthed and molded by outraged nature.
Oh.
Christy tried to cringe, praying they wouldn't see her. She soared over toxic swamps, percolating with a foul and fetid soup. And she watched people desperately trying to snatch the most meager of existences from their half-dead surroundings. She saw babies dragged cold and lifeless from rad-damaged wombs, and she wanted to weep, but phantoms couldn't shed tears. Flying up and arcing down again over bitter seas, she plunged through a maelstrom of buffeting memory, reliving in a heartbeat all of her own suffering at the hands and bestial imaginations of the depraved men who sought to rule Deathlands. She was flung headlong on the swirling gales, the clean, fresh wind of hope filling her lungs with an intoxicating purity. She raced upward toward the sun, exulting in its life-giving heat, its eternal power. The brilliant fiery surface greeted her joyfully, miles-long tongues of flame lapping toward her in a burning yet arousing embrace. She knew the sun would change the world, transform its horror into beauty, saturate it with sacrum, and return it to health. The sun wanted, needed her help. It couldn't do it alone. The sun caressed her, showered her with hot, fierce kisses. Love and desire swelled within her, building, rising, cresting.
You belong to me. You have always belonged to me. Long have I awaited you. You are the mother of a dynasty that will last 10,000 years.
Oh.
She spread herself wide, inviting the sun to enter her, to fill her. Christy awoke, with the echoes of her own cry ringing in her ears. She sat up shuddering, feeling her hair knotting and twisting in wild convulsions.
Your dew is in all my limbs.
She flung aside the sheet and swung her legs out of bed, her knees weak and wobbling. In the dim light of the brass lamp suspended from the ceiling, she saw her sleeping gown was in disarray, and saw the flush rising from her breasts up to her throat.
Oh, what's happening to me? Gaia, give me the strength.
My dew is in all your limbs.
Akhenaten opened his eyes. He lay back on the couch in his private chamber, waiting for his wild pulse beat to steady and the throbbing in his temples to abate. Perspiration gleamed on his near-naked body, touching and stinging the wounds inflicted only hours before by Cotter. He deliberately averted his gaze from the bulge stretching the fabric of his loincloth. Penetrating Christy Roth's sleeping consciousness and directing it in the channels he wanted it to go had been more strenuous than he had anticipated. Though her natural empathic powers provided him with a way in, her loyalty and love for Cotter and the rest of her people formed a very strong barrier. Rather than try to batter it down, he had searched for ways around it. The primal force of her sexuality was one route, but even that led only so far. It was deeply entangled with the higher emotions, not a separate thing easily isolated and manipulated as it had been with the others, O'Brien and Harrier. O'Brien's intellect was so regimented that most of her emotions had been compartmentalized, locked away in a drawer in the dark recesses of her mind. It hadn't been difficult to unlock and use the contents of that drawer. In fact, she had been pathetically grateful to him for opening it. His eyes grew wet when he thought of O'Brien. She had loved him madly, unconditionally. He had loved her as his mother, his mate, but never as his queen. He would have made her so if only she had lived. Harrier had been quite different. Her emotions lurked very close to the surface and were rather shallow, at least compared to O'Brien's. She had loved him too, though she really hadn't had much of a choice. Akhenaten sat up and walked across the room to the window. He transmitted a tentative probe, seeking out Nephron's mind. Without much surprise, she detected his presence and deflected it. He smiled slightly. She possessed none of her mother's compliance of spirit. He looked to the west and saw his pyramid thrusting up toward the deep, blue-black sky, gleaming white and ghostly in the starlight. It lacked only a few more casing blocks and the capstone. Then it would stand whole, a beacon of hope, lighting a path of his glory over the barren face of the world. Once it was complete, so would he be, able to shape and forge the planet into a paradise. He would know what it was like to be Osiris, the father of a new civilization. And he would know again, at long last, what it was like to love. After Mildred returned to the Hall of Women, after the indoctrination session, Grandmother sent her off to another part of the palace, to report to Mimsies. The rambling building was divided into quarters, and one quarter was the domain of Pharaoh's chief counselor. As she padded along the corridors, she kept an eye out for either Kayla or Nefren. When the corridor branched to the right and to the left, she impulsively turned left, in the opposite direction of where Grandmother had instructed her to go. Rich tapestries hung on the polished paneled walls, the lofty ceiling adorned with ornate and intricate carvings and silver-chased scrollwork.
Oh!
As she turned a corner, she nearly trod on Nefron's toes. The girl almost dropped the bowl of fruit in her hands, and she regarded Mildred with wide, fearful eyes.
What are you doing here?
I work here, thanks in part to you.
You are in Pharaoh's quarter. You have been assigned to Mimsies. Go.
You can spare a sec for Scheherazade. A girl came to me this morning. She told me that you had sent her, and that Jack Lauren was safe.
Kayla, my maid. She spoke the truth. She also visited your friends in the cell blocks.
What's being done about Christy?
I'm on my way to her now. Pharaoh wishes to see her this morning.
What's the plan for getting us out of here?
I'll arrange transportation and provisions.
And our weapons?
I'll find them. Do not fear.
When and where?
Not here. You must trust me, Mildred. Be patient, please. Go back the way you came and report to Mimsies. Now!
Mildred had retraced half of her steps before she realized she had done it. She found Mimsies Hall again without too much difficulty, wondering again at the absence of sentries posting along the corridors. Unlike the afternoon before, the black man was dressed in a flowing blue robe, an outfit she assumed was his robe of office. He stood at the balustrade of the terrace, and when she entered, he beckoned for her to join him there.
Did you spend a pleasant evening?
No.
Good. If you had, Grandmother would be severely punished. As it is, if the decision was up to me, I'd have you and your scavenger friends staked out in the desert atop a bed of cactus. Do you know how Aten operates?
No.
I'll spell it out for you, Brown Sugar. It's divided into classes, but we don't observe strict distinctions. We're not numerous enough for that. There's only a handful of what you might call royal insiders. I'm at the top of the heap since Osorkin lost his brain and took off. Life in Aten is easy. The system is smooth, except for a little spot of bother a year or so ago. Everybody has obligations and duties to discharge to the kingdom. All they have to do is discharge them, and they earn privileges. You know what the first privilege you'll earn will be?
No.
Mimsies grabbed Mildred by the upper arms and pulled her hard against him. She splayed out her hands on his chest, first trying to push him away, then relaxing into his arms. He closed a hand over her left breast, fingers kneading it through the thin leather covering.
You get to let me fuck you.
But not for a while yet, Brown Sugar. You gotta prove you're worthy. Now get to the kitchen. It's past time for my breakfast.
Mildred turned, and he gave her a swat on the rear to inspire her to pick up her pace. She said not a word. She was too pleased with herself to speak, for fear of betraying her small triumph. She kept her hand closed tight around the metal ankh she had slipped from the delicate chain on Mimsy's neck. Doc's first day of servitude was, by and large, a bore. Assigned to a maintenance detail, he followed a crew of four into a covered shed at the far side of the compound. Within were a number of the solar-powered chariots in various states of disrepair. His job was to help repair them, and so he did. The first chariot he turned his attention upon had a burned-out wheel bearing, and under the helpful directions of his fellow workers, he rebuilt it by melting down the original in a small smelter and recasting it in a mold. During the morning hours, he worked quickly and efficiently with a minimum of conversation. Only one man tried to engage him in small talk, an old, gnarled fellow who looked to be his age or a trifle older. His name was Naceris. His thin white hair was arranged in several looping braids over his brown scalp.
Looks like we're the only snowtops here.
I guess so.
You know, for safety's sake, you ought to do your hair in braids, like mine. You don't want to get it tangled up in an axle or something and have yourself snatched bald. Almost happened to me once.
Funny as hell, too.
That's because it didn't happen to you, Zofren. I'm trying to give our new pal here a little safety tip. I don't need to have you butting in. I'll be glad to do it for you.
Doc thought it over for a moment, not particularly relishing having the old man style his hair for him, but also knowing he needed an ally and a source of information. So he agreed. During the noon meal break, he submitted to Naceris' tonsorial ministrations, allowing the man to twist and plait and loop his hair. He felt a sharp sense of the ridiculous, but he was able to engage the fellow in conversation, in much the same way he used to pump his barber for local gossip. Naceris was garrulous, if not necessarily precise, in everything he said. As Doc had halfway expected to hear, Naceris was one of the first citizens of Aten, one of the first acolytes of Pharaoh Akhenaten. He yammered about the difficulty of excavating the city, telling tedious stories of heat, endless broken tools, and days of thirst and hunger.
Shouldn't you be retired by now, on a pension from Pharaoh for all of your contributions?
Oh, there was a problem a while back. I made something I shouldn't have for Pharaoh's daughter. This is my punishment. But what the hell? It's better than being dead, and at least I have something to do with my time.
What did you make?
Oh, just a little piece of jewelry. See, I was one of Pharaoh's chief craftsmen. When Nephron asked me to make some little doodads for her and some of her friends, I didn't ask questions. I should have.
What happened?
Oh, I'd rather not say.
Did Nephron give one of these little doodads to Osorkan?
I've said too much. I'm old. My head gets mixed up. Forget what I told you.
With that, Naceris scuttled out of the shed. When the noon meal break was over, Doc decided he was tired. He hadn't slept very soundly the night before, so he hung around the shed doing as little work as was humanly possible. His deportment was an education in laziness. The other three men labored on, refitting a chariot's drive shaft, and paid him no attention, so he went for a little stroll around the compound. No one hailed him as he passed among the workers in the yard stirring a putty-like substance in metal-walled cubes. He found a back entrance into the palace, and after walking down a hallway, he followed his nose to a huge, well-equipped, and very hot kitchen. Squinting through the steam and smoke rising from open grills and sinks full of hot water, he saw Mildred arranging food on a tray. She looked up as he sauntered over to her. Doc had almost forgotten his looped braided hair.
How goes your career as a royal scullery maid?
I've had worse jobs. When I was attending university, I worked in a fast food restaurant. That was more like slavery than this place.
Mildred looked around furtively, then took Doc by the elbow and guided him over to a corner where they were screened from casual view by steam and smoke. She slid her fingers into her cleavage.
I want to show you something.
Please, Dr. Wyeth, I'm fully aware of the old adage, when in Rome, do as the Romans do, but I'm afraid that...
Oh, muzzle it, Doc. Look.
An Ankh amulet, like the one Danielson wore.
I filched it from Mimsy's.
Who?
He used to be called Stockbridge. He's Pharaoh's chief counselor.
Ah, and you decided to lift his jewelry as a prank?
Don't be deliberately obtuse, Doc. You're hard enough to stomach when you're unintentionally obtuse. It's more than jewelry. It's a talisman.
We have fallen on sorry times indeed when our resident adherent to hard science resorts to the bead and rattle explanation.
Remember what Danielson said about Akhenaten stumbling onto ancient principles of energy, transference, and manipulation? He traced a relationship between the body's electromagnetic field and certain Egyptian glyphs. The Ankh-I War protected him from the Incarnate's weapons, and he indicated that it was also a psychic shield.
Yes, I recall him saying something along those lines. I do not recall that it correlated with the science I was taught or practiced.
Your science is out of date. Every substance, organic and inorganic, is surrounded by an energy field, an aura. Each field's intensity and quality is determined by the structure of its component molecules.
And?
And the human nervous system, which is itself a conductor of electrical energy, can be influenced by the proximity of other substances that have strong fields. The amount of influence depends upon the frequency of the nerve and the pulsating frequency of the object. If the frequencies are a match, the strength of the nerve impulses can be increased through the principle known as electronic cadence. If the fields are out of sync, the effect can be deleterious. We've already seen that the amulet worked to protect Danielson. This is basic biochemistry, actually. Silver, copper, and gold resonate with the body's energy field. Remember those crystalline gold gadgets in Tirawa?
Yes.
Well, obviously, if the Ankhs are made of certain metals and of certain designs, they can be used as a means of containing the life force, what Danielson called the sacrum. He also said the Ankh blocked Akhenaten's power, so he couldn't be read.
I see. If we wear the same amulets, then we would not only be immune to the Metau rods, but shield our minds from Akhenaten.
And possibly Nephron, his daughter. She's behind the so-called escape plan. She told me she sent a girl named Kayla to talk to you.
Yes, this morning. You suspect this Nephron, is it, possesses a marked degree of psychic ability?
Stands to reason, doesn't it? She is her father's daughter, even if he doesn't want to recognize her as blood of his blood. Anyhow, she's made a lot of promises without mentioning any specifics. She keeps asking me to trust her. I don't.
A wise precaution under the circumstances. Oddly, my hairstylist was an elderly slyboots named Nassaris. He claimed he fell out of Pharaoh's favor because he made something he shouldn't have for Nephron. I received the distinct impression she had used him in some fashion. Perhaps he was the craftsman Danielson mentioned who made his Ankh.
Perhaps. And if that's so, there may be a pot of intrigue boiling and Nephron wants to add us to the mix.
If we don't care to rely on her promises, then I hope you have something of a plan in mind.
A germ of one. Here. If you can, get the Ankh to Ryan and JB and tell them what we've discussed. You seem to have the run of the compound.
So far, I have yet to test my boundaries.
Keep testing them, but don't end up on the business end of one of those magic frog giggers.
Nephron fetched Christy at mid-morning, presenting her with a bowl of fresh fruit, which she didn't sample or even glance toward. The girl helped her to get dressed and apply her cosmetics.
Did you sleep well? I've managed to contact all of your friends.
What?
Your friends. Mildred, Doc, JB, Jack, and Ryan.
Why whisper about them? Pharaoh is aware they're here. You are Akhenaten's daughter, aren't you?
I am. Your friend Mildred knew that, so I assumed you did as well.
You are the heir to the throne of Aten?
No. My father decreed that I was not worthy to continue the dynasty. He desires a son, a prince, not a princess.
How do you feel about that decision?
My feelings on the subject are not open for discussion. I do as Pharaoh commands.
Nephron held a hand mirror before her. Christy felt a shock at the unfamiliar features staring back at her. Every inch of her face was as carefully and sharply painted as an enameled doll's, her big eyes surrounded by fish-shaped black outlines.
Well, thank you.
We must go now. Pharaoh awaits.
Christy and Nephron went out and down the corridors to Akhenaten's study. He wasn't there, so while Nephron busied herself with pouring goblets of the dandelion wine, Christy scanned the spines of the heavily laden bookshelves. The collection of pre-dark books in the study seemed to number in the thousands. Christy drew a leather-bound volume from the shelf at random. The words Alexander the Great were embossed on the leather cover. She flipped through the pages, scanning the life story of one of the ancient world's most famous conquerors.
From an early age, Alexander was not as other men. His abilities and powers of persuasion confounded all of his teachers, Aristotle among them.
Nephron, what mischief have you been plotting now?
Answer me.
What do you mean, Lord Pharaoh?
The Day Watch reported that you were seen leaving the city walls on more than one occasion yesterday. Since you should be preparing for the ceremony rather than taking the air, I find it rather curious.
There is nothing curious about it, Lord Pharaoh. I was indeed preparing for the ceremony. I dispatched my maid, Kayla, to see if a new bed of flowers had bloomed.
Such fripperies are not within your realm of responsibility. Speak the truth, girl.
I am, my lord. I swear it.
If so, it would be the first time since your birth. You think because I cannot get a deep read on you, I do not know if you're lying. I do know Darlingest daughter. I do.
There is no need for this.
You are right. I slept badly and am out of sorts this morning. Nephron, leave us. I will summon you if I need you.
She is quite good to me, Pharaoh. She has helped me in many ways to make my stay comfortable.
She was only following my express command. She has always followed her own agenda.
Then why do you keep her around if you mistrust her?
I have my reasons. Is Alexander a subject of interest to you?
No, not really.
Akhenaten went to the sideboard and fetched her a goblet of the wine Nephron had poured. He handed her the drinking cup, and for the first time, Christie saw the marks on his arms and face, the slightly reddened lines of almost healed wounds.
In 332 BC, Alexander the Great invaded Egypt and assumed the role of pharaoh. He didn't stay long, but his general and successor, Ptolemy, established a long dynasty, which included Cleopatra. She was queen in every sense of the word. And you look like a queen as well, though a bit tired.
I didn't sleep well last night. Like you.
Bad dreams?
I haven't decided yet. Time will tell.
Perhaps you've made a decision regarding what we discussed yesterday.
It's a lot to absorb in such a short time. I need more proof of our intertwined destinies than a reproduction of an ancient bust dug out of the ground half a world away.
Proof? Such as?
Proof of your assertion that during the capstone ceremony we'll both be imbued with the powers of the gods.
I'll admit to overstating on that, simply for dramatic effect. However, their principle is sound, and the results will be much the same.
How?
Come with me, and I will show you how.
They left the study, walked side by side down the corridor, through an arched doorway into another corridor whose walls were inlaid with gold leaf and silver chasing. Brass censers swung from the ceiling, filling the passage with perfumed incense.
This part of the palace is forbidden to all. You are the only human being other than myself who has been here.
They turned down a smaller, narrower hallway that ended at a brass door. Over the arch, etched into a stone tablet, was a glyph resembling an upside-down trident with jagged tines. Akhenaten turned the handle of the door and pushed it open.
It's not locked.
This is my cartouche above the door. Any of my subjects who would dare trespass here would have to be mad or suicidal, or both. Regardless of the cause, they would die.
The door led onto a stair that plunged down at a 45-degree angle into pitch blackness.
I can't see a thing.
Take my hand. I'll see for both of us.
He led her down. The stairway wasn't as long as she had imagined. At the foot of the steps, he tugged a dangling cord, and a light fixture blazed into dazzling life overhead.
Electric lights?
Solar batteries, my own application.
Gaia!
Resting on the floor, its base occupying almost every centimeter of it, loomed a miniature replica of the pyramid. The point still towered a dozen feet above the floor, and its base was at least thrice that. The surface was incised with gold-painted hieroglyphic characters, and short inscriptions covered all four sides. It glittered and sparkled under the light, as if it were dusted with powdered diamonds.
The capstone. A pyramidion I crafted myself with my own hands, following the descriptions I found in the decoded scrolls of Amenemhat.
Christie walked around the structure, noticing that its stone facade was shot through with gleaming specks of crystal. Reaching out to touch it, she felt a distinct tingling in her index finger.
Piezoelectric properties.
You're absolutely correct. The secret of so-called pyramid power. I have found three distinct energy forms generated by pyramids. The first is piezoelectric, the second electrostatic, and I refer to the third as bio-oral. You impress me with your knowledge. Certain types of crystals produce electromotive force.
The king's chamber and the pyramid is lined with tons of microscopic quartz and potassium tartrate crystal particles. When this capstone is in place, the king's chamber will be converted into a perpetual energy generator.
What kind of energy are you talking about?
Sacrum, the basic life force of the universe. Do you know what this means?
No.
A normal human being inside the king's chamber would be affected by the generated induction field. His brainwave frequency would be disrupted, and his latent psionic talents may be triggered. He would no doubt dismiss these effects as hallucinations. You and I already possess enhanced and active psi abilities. The sacrum would interact with our abilities, magnifying them, amplifying them.
You're already one of the most powerful men I've ever met. Why do you want more?
There are many powerful men. The world has no need of more of them. What it needs is a savior, a god, and a goddess. Can you conceive the miracles we might work? Can you imagine what glories our offspring will be capable of? We will establish a new golden age for the earth, a place of beauty, free of fear, of want, of pain. Think of it. No more pain. We will be worshipped, and our memories will be worshipped for thousands of years. In that sense, our immortality is assured. Help me, for the love of humanity. Help me build this dynasty. Let us complete the dream we held in our earlier incarnations, all those millennia ago. Help me, Christy. Love me as I love you. Help me.
Christy felt her soul being drawn out by Akhenaten's eyes, pulling into him, joining, intermingling, entwining with his own spirit. There was a sensation of all sanity and stability crumbling beneath her. The roots of her prehensile hair prickled at her scalp. She could no longer see Akhenaten. It was as if the walls, the ceiling, the pyramidion had withdrawn from her. All she could see was a pair of eyes, flaming redly in the black gulfs of space.
I will.
Nephron strode swiftly but silently into a dim hallway, the last stretch of a labyrinth that twisted and turned within the palace walls. She came to a small inner chamber lit by a single flickering taper. A dark man in a blue robe lounged on a settee.
Well, sweetie, your dupes are all in place. Strange tools, even for you.
I imagine the newcomers believe me to be their tool.
Yeah. You moved a little too impulsively, don't you think? You should have consulted me.
No time. A profitable opportunity presented itself, and I seized it, just like you taught me.
Using my incarnates was a good plan.
Except the newcomers killed the only ones you could trust.
And they'll pay for it.
Not for a while yet. Pharaoh is suspicious.
How do you know?
One of the wall sentries saw me outside of the city yesterday when Kayla and I were hiding the albino.
Not good. Not good. If Pharaoh finds him...
Oh, they won't. Kayla has moved in twice already. I'm not even sure where he is right now, just in case Pharaoh tried to probe me.
What's the albino like?
Young and strong. He killed your Serapis in Baltic Alley, though he was debilitated by a Metau rod. We've kept him drugged since then, and I squeezed his mind while he slept.
Squeezed his mind how?
I stimulated his libido. I embedded certain perceptions about Kayla and me into his consciousness. That, combined with the potion and Kayla's attention to him, will keep him tractable until we need him.
You hope.
He's young, like I said, full of hormones, and his sex drive is very close to the surface. Very easy to manipulate.
As long as he's satisfied with Kayla and will stay put for another couple of days.
If his attention wanders, I'll provide him with another distraction.
You?
If need be. If I gauged his reaction to me correctly, the very thought of me gets him hard.
Kind of like how that mutie whore affects Pharaoh. How goes it with her?
Her psychic defenses are strong, but undisciplined. I encountered considerable resistance yesterday when I supplanted the image of the one-eyed man with that of Pharaoh. It is difficult to, on the one hand, verbally try to convince her that Pharaoh is a monster, and on the other, mentally nudge her into his arms.
A little too complicated for my taste.
Not really. Christie is so busy screening out Pharaoh's influence, she's completely unaware that I'm slipping in the back door and chipping away at her barriers.
Where is she now?
With Pharaoh. She seemed sluggish this morning, so I figure Pharaoh gave her a mind squeeze while she slept. Combined with the spiked wine I poured for her and Pharaoh's proximity, she should be a prime candidate for Spellbound City before the day is through.
Sort of like your mother.
He seduced and tricked her and killed her.
He didn't kill her, and it didn't take a whole hell of a lot of seducing.
She wasn't in her right mind. You know that!
Oh, she was in her right mind. It was her reproduction system that wasn't right. Pharaoh fixed her so she could give birth to you, but it was a one-time-only deal. The second time he played around with her insides, she wasn't so lucky.
He did operate on her, performing surgery against her will. That's the same as killing her.
Nephron, sweetie, poor old Connie didn't have much will left to her.
And whose fault was that?
I've managed to keep your dear old dad pretty much out of my head for the past few years.
Well, aren't you lucky?
Not as lucky as I'm going to be. The machinery is all in place in the King's Chamber. The newcomers won't cause you any trouble, since you're their only hope of getting out of here. They'll do what you say. If it's revenge you're after, you'll get it. So relax.
You're right. What about the Incarnates?
What's left of them, you mean? They're primed and ready to play their parts. Are you sure you can count on the kid, the albino?
I'll be able to persuade him to push the deadfall lever. Since he's never been anywhere near Pharaoh, he will not be able to sense his intentions.
It's foolproof. Once that mutant whore son and his mutie bitch are out of the way, I'll declare you queen. The newcomers will make perfect patsies.
Where's your amulet?
Shit! I don't know what could have... I always wear it!
You'll have to be around Pharaoh a lot these next couple of days. You better find another one very quickly, or this foolproof plan you're so proud of will be a foolproof way to get us all executed.
Like Akhenaten had said, Ryan awoke feeling as if every muscle had been worked over by a meat tenderizer. He'd had no trouble getting back into the dormitory the night before, and hadn't spoken to JB. He collapsed onto his pallet and lay awake for a very long time, his body aching, his soul in agony. He managed to fall asleep after several hours, and awakened when the dawn-to-noon labor shift shuffled out for breakfast. He tried to go back to sleep, but only dozed fitfully. When he finally decided to get up, he saw JB staring at him disconcertedly.
What?
You got bruises on your neck.
Not too far off the mark. It's the royal handprint of Pharaoh Akhenaten.
Tersely, without spicing it up, Ryan told the armorer of his violent encounter with Akhenaten.
Dark night. Why didn't he chill you?
He could have. Ordered some flunkies to do it. He said he'd rather punish me. Hold Christie over my head to control and torture me.
Bastard cold heart.
Yeah. Let's see if there's anything to eat in this dump.
There was. A wheeled cart held savory biscuits, tea, and a watered-down sort of fruit beverage. To their mild surprise, they had more or less free run of the dormitory and found a rec room where men played various board games. Curiously, their dorm mates were disinterested in them, treating them indifferently. After inviting them to join in a particularly boring-looking game and being promptly refused, JB and Ryan were pretty much left to themselves. They found a shower room, which they took eager advantage of. Water flowed from amphorae and ran down carefully chiseled channels and drains in the floor, dripping into purification tanks just below and recirculated to supply tanks. So rare was the commodity, water had to be carefully conserved. No more permitted to evaporate than was unavoidable. Adjacent to the shower room was a workshop equipped with a number of hand tools and even a bandsaw, drill press, and a punch. Fossa was there at a bench, sharpening a number of chisels on a whetstone. He looked up when they entered.
Hey, you want to help me get the tools ready for the day?
Is it part of our responsibility?
No, not exactly. I just thought you might care to make our shift go smoother. We can use another shift's tools, you know.
Ryan shrugged and sat next to the man on the bench. He ran an oiled rag over the chisels to no real purpose, except to appear helpful.
Tell me about the capstone ceremony.
The capstone is a crystalline pyramidion built by Pharaoh's own hands, following ancient texts. Once in place, It will draw down the power of Osiris and fill Akhenaten with the supernal power of a god.
Where's the capstone now?
Why do you want to know?
Won't we be the ones to put it into place?
No, you have yet to be purified. You won't be allowed to touch it.
Oh. Well, you can at least tell us where it is.
I can't. Its location is a secret known only to the Pharaoh.
JB poked around in the contents of a wooden bin at the end of the table. He picked up a thin wafer of gray metal.
Some kind of alloy. Lead and copper, maybe.
It's used in the manufacture of the Metau rods.
This stuff? Doesn't seem like it'd be a very good conductor.
That and the other materials are used on the rod's handles to protect the incarnates from their own mana energy. You are a rather inquisitive pair.
Why shouldn't we be? If our future's Lionaten in service to Pharaoh, we need to learn as much as possible.
The answer seemed to satisfy Fossa. He returned his attention to sharpening the chisels, and JB and Ryan wandered away from the workroom. They walked down the corridor.
Did you understand any of that mumbo-jumbo horseshit about the capstone?
Not nearly enough. We're getting nowhere fast.
A tall, scrawny, faintly ridiculous figure suddenly stepped from a side corridor. It required a second for them to recognize the lean figure wearing a kilt.
What are you doing running around in that hairdo with your skinny shanks showing, Doc?
I assure you that you present quite as ludicrous a picture as I, John Barrymore. I have felicitous news, but I cannot tarry over long. So far, no one has prevented me from going where I will. However, I do not care to test...
Have you seen Mildred?
Yes. Yesterday. She is working on Mimsy's staff.
Mimsy's?
A counselor. His real name is Stockbridge.
What about Christy?
I have not seen her, but I am sure she is being well treated.
Any word from this Kayla about efforts to get us out of here?
Not directly, though Dr. Wyeth informed me that Akhenaten's daughter, Nephron, is the guiding force behind the plan, or plot. She seems to be in touch with Dr. Wyeth, and that is the reason I am here.
Doc dug around in his loincloth and brought out an ankh, a smaller duplicate of the one Danielson had around his neck.
The doctor lifted this from Mimsy's. She theorizes it may be our key to getting out of here.
JB took it from his hand and inspected it closely.
It looks sort of like that alloy in the workroom. Why does Mildred think it's important?
Doc quickly related their discussion of the day before.
The doctor feels that the Ankh may dissipate or block psychic influence directed toward us by our hosts.
I suppose I can make a couple with the odds and ends in the workroom. I'll use this one as a template. I just don't know if the metal is the same.
It's straw grasping, but it's the only straw we have. Christy may be under psychic influence. We'll need to make enough of those things for all of us.
Has it occurred to anybody that we could already be under the influence of Hell Eyes and not know it?
An unnerving notion, indeed.
You said something to me last night. If a strong mind consciously resists him, he can't do much.
You met Akhenaten? What kind of man is he?
Hey, newcomers! Get ready to go on shift! You, old one, go back to your station. You're impeding progress.
The three of them exchanged grim glances and did as they were told. JB carefully slipped the ankh into an inner pocket of his apron. It had taken most of the shift to lay down the casing blocks that would serve as the foundation and support pedestal for the pyramid's capstone. They were told that the following day, the morning shift would raise the roller rails in order to convey the pyramidion to the apex of the monument. Ryan had given up on the idea of sowing the seeds of discontent among his fellow laborers. First, there was little time to get the idea percolating. Second, most of them still retained vivid memories of the aborted uprising of nearly 2 years before. And third, if they were indeed in bondage, they didn't find it particularly difficult to bear. When their shift was over and the workers were back in the dormitory, JB and Ryan went to the shower room. Doc was waiting for them there, a tool belt girding his bony waist. He pretended to be examining one of the water spouts, tapping on it with a small hammer. Ryan and JB stood under the adjacent spout and showered. To their questions about Christy, Jack, and Mildred, Doc responded with doleful negatives.
Well, this is ridiculous. There's nothing to stop us from just strolling out of here.
Stroll out to where? The only place to go is Fort Fubar. And if we don't stay there and strike out on our own away from the redoubt, how can we carry enough food and water? We won't have our blasters and we won't have Christy, Mildred, and Jack.
Well, we know where Mildred is, and we got a good idea of where Christy's being held.
It is my suspicion that Nephron plans to stage our escape during the pyramid ceremony. From what I've heard, all of Aten will be caught up in the festivities.
I still don't understand this whole deal about the pyramid.
Not even historians or Egyptologists really understood it. In my day, there was a great deal of speculation regarding the Great Pyramid of Cheops. How old it was, what secrets it contained, and most important, how it was built.
We know now how it was probably built.
There was a lot more to the pyramids than most scientists wanted to admit. A correlation was found between some of the pyramid measurements and the circumference of the world, and the value of pi. That's all speculation, however. What is known is that in order to get the Great Pyramids built, Egyptian society was made repressive to increase the efficiency of the human laborers. The historical Akhenaten was obsessed with gaining spiritual knowledge through a mystic power created by the pyramids. Evidently, his red-eyed namesake shares the same esoteric objective.
The main difference is that the first Akhenaten didn't hold Christy as a hostage.
In which case, we need to assure ourselves she is acting under some sort of psychic duress.
You think she's not?
There's only one way to find out for certain. Get an Ankh to her.
I'll see what I can do about that tonight.
Let's go to the workroom and get started. We'll brazen it out.
Most of the workers were having their evening meal, so the room was deserted. While Ryan stood watch by the door, JB hunted through the metal scraps in the bin, comparing them with the composition of the Ankh. He found several wafers that seemed similar, and he traced the outline of the amulet with a piece of soapstone. JB got the bandsaw working. He had to keep pumping a foot pedal so it would spin at a high speed. He managed to cut a fairly close approximation of the Ankh, then moved over to the drill press to punch a hole through it. With a hammer and grindstone, he smoothed down the rough edges and spurs, then tossed it to Ryan for inspection.
It'll have to do. Make another one.
JB repeated the process, laboriously forming a second Ankh in less time than it took to make the first. He was busy outlining the third amulet when Ryan alerted him.
Somebody coming.
Why are you here?
No reason.
You are not supposed to be using the tools without authorization or supervision. What have you been making?
Should I tell him?
Sure, why not?
JB turned over the piece of metal on the table, exposing the template Ankh.
That's a forbidden thing. You're making a forbidden thing. Pharaoh will punish you.
Why? It's just jewelry, right?
It's not so much the symbol itself as the metal fashioned into that shape. It interferes with the Pharaoh's power.
Yeah, so we've heard. That's why we're making them.
Ryan hit Fossa hard, a short jab to the kidney. Fossa rose up on his toes and fell forward into JB's arms. The armorer squatted on his chest and covered his mouth with a hand.
We don't want to chill you, but we will if you force us. All we want is to get out of here.
Why?
Why do we want to leave?
Yes.
My friends and me don't like living as property or as work animals.
But you're well treated here.
I'm not going to waste my time explaining things about freedom and liberty to you. All you need to know is this. If you betray us, you'll die.
While JB spoke, Ryan found a coil of rope and a handful of oily rags.
Your choice, Fossa. We'll tie you up and hide you, or kill you and hide you. Which one will it be?
Tie me up and hide me.
Securely binding and gagging the man was the work of only a few minutes. Hiding him presented another problem. An upright tool chest was affixed to the wall in a far corner. JB removed the hand tools, and Ryan dragged Fossa over to it, pushing him face first against the wood backing. The locker was tall, but not particularly deep, and the fit was tight. The man's bound wrists were jammed fast against his hips when Ryan shut and locked the door.
Let's get back at it. Next time somebody comes in, we better think about chilling them.
Yeah, it'd be simpler all the way around.
In the hours after sunset, the great endless vista of the dark, star-sprinkled sky spread out above the city of Aten. The walls were made of dressed concrete, and vigilant sentries paced their length. But no eye saw two black-cloaked figures emerging from a small postern gate that was always locked but never guarded. The two moved across open ground swiftly, keeping to the shadows. Mimsy's and Nephron walked through the sand, their concealing cloaks fluttering in the blessedly cool breeze. They strode silently until they reached the bottom of the stair at the base of the pyramid. It loomed above them, strangely beautiful in the starlight.
You know where the entrance is?
Of course. I studied the blueprints. Follow me.
Nephron went determinedly up the steps at a half trot. Mimsy's hiked up the hem of his cloak and followed at a considerably slower pace and without a fraction of her nimbleness of foot. Halfway up the side of the pyramid, Nefren stopped and watched Mimsy's ascent with a condescending half-smile on her lips.
Now what?
The keystone sequence.
Nefren stretched out her right arm and hammered with the heel of her hand against the corner of the closest casing stone. The square of stone sank inward, seemingly to sink beneath the surface of the pyramid.
How does that work?
Pressure-sensitive actuators connected to a hydraulic sleeve pivot. Pre-dark engineering, nothing magic about it.
Nefren stepped into a black abyss. After a hesitant moment, Mimsy's followed her into the darkness. He had to squeeze his bulk between the rope-wrapped drum of a winch and pulley device. Far away glimmered a pinpoint of light. He followed the cloaked girl as she went forward into the shadows, which slowly receded before them until they stood in the king's chamber. It was a vast hollow pyramid within the pyramid, made of pink-hued granite. Workmen had set up flaming braziers at intervals of 10 feet along either side of the room. Arrangements of fragrant white flowers stood between each brazier. The air was heavy with the scent of gardenias and incense. At the apex of the pyramid, suspended by a web of wires, hung a copper sigil of an enormous, lidless eye. It stared down with a fathomless gaze upon the varnished sarcophagus. Light glittered from quartz inlays, gleamed on the gold-leaf face, fashioned into an exaggeratedly noble likeness of Akhenaten. High on the ceiling, two shaft openings aligned with mathematical precision allowed the diffused light of two carefully selected stars to reflect from the polished surface of the sarcophagus.
It's a little unsettling to be in here.
Yeah. Millions of tons of stone held together by a small deadfall. Just waiting for someone to pull the right lever in the right way at the right time.
That doesn't bother me. It's the thought that Pharaoh's scheme to increase his power might really work.
He explained it to me once. It didn't make a whole hell of a lot of sense.
It's simple, really. The crystal in the pyramid acts as energy condensers. They hold enough bio-aural energy to trigger a series of synapses in Pharaoh's brain and relay the energy to his pineal gland. The process will take about an hour. If Christie is with him, we'll have to deal with two insufferable chrysalides evolving into arrogant butterflies.
What happens if you undergo the process instead?
Why do you ask that?
Just curious. You inherited some of your father's powers. Maybe you can enhance them this way.
Perhaps. I'd rather have him dead.
Mimsy's didn't reply as she paced with feline grace around the chamber. Acting as the consort of a queen, of a young goddess, might have been an exciting prospect if any woman other than Nefren was the candidate. She was certainly beautiful, but she was too bright and too sleek for his tastes. He preferred the other court women, languid and fluttery though they were. The image of the new woman, Mildred, flashed into his mind.
Still think she's the cure for your problem, Mimsy's?
What are you talking about? You little bitch, you read my thoughts.
You transmitted them. Your lust for that woman is so strong. You should be wearing an Ankh shield, like I told you.
Drop it. Are you sure nothing can accidentally trigger the deadfall?
No. But I'll have to warn Jack to be very careful when he's in the relieving chamber not to dislodge the release mechanism.
Just make sure you're away from here before the ceremony begins.
I will.
What about the kid?
Even if he gets stuck in the relieving chamber, he can crawl out through one of the shafts. We'll have our assassin.
You sure he's under your control?
All he has to do is trip the keystone lever. He's under my control for that little task.
As long as Pharaoh doesn't hear anything in time for him to escape.
There's no way. The only thing he'll hear are the blocks falling down. The only way to escape is through the Grand Gallery, and that will be jammed with his counselors. Only the few people right by the mouth of the corridor will be able to reach safety.
Maybe we should put another of the newcomers up there in the relieving chamber, just in case your boy doesn't make it. How about the woman?
Well, not until you're done with her, of course.
Of course.
You're a fool. A lust-besotted fool.
What are you talking about?
I see it in your mind.
See what?
The woman, Mildred, took your shield. She lifted your Ankh while you were busy pawing her and licking your lips. She knows.
How? How?
That's not important, but she knows.
Danielson was a yakker, not a communicator, and as the third day of Dean's stay in Fort Fubar crawled to a close, He seriously contemplated filling either the man's mouth or his own ears with sand. It wasn't so much that he resented the old man, but was too angry at his father for leaving him again to even try to make the best of the situation. Still, he remembered a saying he had learned while at the Brody School, something to the effect that he also serves who only stands and waits. It was a very cold comfort. Dean spent most of his waking hours in Fort Fubar trying to avoid sunstroke or gazing out on the empty horizon in the direction his father and his friends had traveled. Nothing ever stirred on the wasteland but the wavery, watery heat shimmer. Sometimes, when Danielson began one of his seemingly endless and pointless narratives, Dean would try to listen and construct and fit it into some kind of coherent chronology. So much of what Danielson said concerning his life was contradictory and came in no particular order. He thought he had learned how to tune out the man's disconnected ramblings. On the fourth sunset in Fort Fubar, while Dean was gazing at the horizon, the star in his hands, the wry realization came to him that he actually had absorbed a lot more than he would have guessed. Danielson was born in what used to be called Indiana to a Farrer family. He had joined up with a traders group when he was in his early 30s, so he looked older than he truly was. Ryan and JB had only been with Trader a short while before he was cut loose. Danielson had lived peaceably in Aden for a long time under the name of Asorkin. He shared counselor responsibilities with a man he referred to alternately as Mimsies and Mel. The names of his three wives were Piatha, Flourish, and Iokal. He had three children, but all were dead now, but his oldest daughter, Kayla. Something had happened in Aden, and Danielson had abandoned both Pharaoh's service and his own daughter to return to this pest hole. As the sun slowly sank out of sight, Danielson called to him from the doorway of the storage building.
Time to eat, boy.
Dean pulled his gaze away from the color-splashed horizon and shifted the strap of the rifle on his shoulder. The star was heavy, and constantly carrying it had worn a raw, tender abrasion on the skin of his right shoulder. Inside the ramshackle building, Danielson stirred another of his stews simmering in a pot over a small fire.
Tomorrow is the fourth day.
He sat down cross-legged on the sandy floor and waited for Danielson to ladle the stew into a plate. The old man passed it to him.
If your pa isn't back by sundown, I think you'd better figure on rolling on to Pharaoh's tomb, the redoubt, by first light the day after. Can't deny it's been a pleasure having you here, son, almost like having my own boy back with me. He's about your age when he...
Dean shifted his gaze and saw tears shining in the man's melancholy gray eyes. He couldn't help but feel a pang of sympathy.
Guess I didn't know how lonesome I was. When you move out, I reckon I'll go with you.
If my dad doesn't show by noon tomorrow, I'm off to this Aten place, not to some Pharaoh's tomb or redoubt.
That's not a sound notion, son. If your pa hasn't come back, then it means he can't come back.
I'll bring him back, and the rest of them too. I'm not going off and leaving them, not knowing what's happened to them.
I don't think your pa would like that, you ending up in the same kind of mess he's in. If you ask me...
I'm not!
You'll be taking a hell of a big risk. I'm afraid I can't allow it.
You gonna try and stop me?
No. Even if I could hog-tie you without getting myself gut-shot, I couldn't keep you tied up all the time. I won't try to stop you.
Resting his plate on his lap, Danielson slipped the thong and ankh amulet from around his neck. He tossed it to Dean, who caught it one-handed, eyeing it skeptically.
What good will this do me?
Maybe none. Maybe all the good in the world. Never can tell. Now eat up. I know it tastes like parboiled shit, but if you're determined to walk into the lion's den, you'll need every ounce of your strength.
Jack settled into his twilight world without too much difficulty or too many questions. Everything was comfortably blurred, all hard edges softened and blunted. During these times, one part of his mind would occasionally come alive with fleeting, alarmed thoughts. But then Kayla would offer him food or drink or herself, and the thoughts would be muddled and warmed by pleasure. He had been told to always remain inside the small house and never to venture outside. He was never left alone except when he slept, which seemed to be often. When he mentioned this curious lethargy to Kayla, she maintained sweetly it was all part of the healing process. However, it seemed a little strange that his sexual energy wasn't adversely affected. In fact, it seemed enhanced. When he was awake, it was as if he were swimming under dreamy water. All he really remembered was lying atop Kayla, thrusting into her, or she was atop him, thrusting down herself. The girl was smooth and warm and avid, and he loved her, really loved her, he thought. Nephron appeared very infrequently, usually, though he could never be sure, at night. He looked upon her hungrily whenever she arrived. He loved her, really loved her, too. She would smile at him fondly, murmur to him, stroke his head. Desire rose in him like a column of fire. After she had departed, Kayla would douse the fire with a fierce heat of her own. The twilight routine seemed to go on for days, for weeks, but he was distantly aware that his sense of time was distorted. One time, when he awoke from a slumber, he realized with a start that he hadn't asked about Ryan, J.B., Christy Duck, or Mildred for what felt like a very long time. Naked, he arose from the pallet, guiltily forcing himself to remember their faces, straining his memory to count how many days and nights had passed. He couldn't. As far as he knew, as little as 2 days or as many as 2 months had passed since he had put himself in the care of Kayla and Nephron. He checked to make sure his weapons were where they were supposed to be. He clicked through the cylinder of the Colt Python, testing the smoothness of the action.
Oh, you should have let me know that you were awake.
Where, Kayla?
Out to get food. She'll be back soon.
Jack didn't look at her. He found himself actually a little afraid to look at her. Already, his body was responding to her presence.
When do I leave?
Growing bored with us, Jack?
When am I going?
Why are you so anxious all of a sudden?
Need to see friends. I need to get out. Need to talk to Ryan.
It is impossible. He is in the men's workers' barracks. I cannot get in there unnoticed.
Need to get out.
Every one of your friends is fine. Thanks to me, you must trust me.
What about Christy?
She is in high favor with Pharaoh.
Tricking him until we escape.
She is charmed by him as well.
No way. I don't believe that.
You must come to terms with the possibility that your friend Christy might not be able to help herself. Pharaoh possesses powers beyond your comprehension. It is a crafty, subtle power. He can enter a mind and deftly change what he finds there. And the victim of the tampering may never know what has happened until it is too late.
Why wait to leave?
Akhenaten's pyramid is very close to completion. You and your friends can escape during the confusion surrounding the ceremony. If we plan it right, you can be many miles from here before your friends are missed.
Where we go?
The gateway.
You know about the gateway?
Oh, yes.
When is pyramid ceremony?
Tomorrow, sunset. I will arrange transportation and return your weapons to you. Look at me, Jack.
Jack turned, jaw muscles bunched with determination. Nephron's eyes seemed to hit him with a dizzying force in the center of his chest, in the center of who he was. His breath caught in his throat as he drank in her nude beauty. He felt himself hardening, rising.
I'm bearing myself to you, Jack, because I need you. I need you to do something for me, for Kayla, for your friends.
What?
Pharaoh and his counselors will be at the dedication ceremony in the pyramid. The king's chamber has been designed so that most of the weight of the stone is deflected by the relieving chambers above it. There is a mechanism built into one chamber that will cause the floors to collapse one by one. The device is built to allow enough time to climb down to an escape shaft. I'll be waiting for you there with your friends. In the confusion, we will escape the city. Everyone will be trying to dig out Pharaoh and the people trapped inside the pyramid.
You need me to do this.
If there was any other way to prevent Pharaoh from imprisoning us here, I would take it. What you have to understand is that Pharaoh is a monster, a mutant who cares for no one but himself. If you don't value your own freedom, then at least value that of your friends. You must do this thing.
Who with the Pharaoh in there?
Toadies, who are as bad as he is. Nobody you need worry about, Jack.
Why me?
Because only you can do it. You're the only man in this whole corrupt city who isn't under Pharaoh's influence. You're strong and fast and agile. Just give me another day and we're free. I'll escape with you.
Kayla too?
Kayla too. You won't let us down. Will you? You won't back out on us after all I and Kayla have done for you?
No. I won't let you and Kata down.
It was the last thing Jack said before Nefren came into his arms, kissing him passionately, inserting her tongue into his mouth, pressing her body tightly against his so he could feel and respond to the erotic, urgent heat of it. They flowed together down to the floor.
Don't think. Just feel.
Yeah.